And good evening once again, everybody. Welcome to another Hoops HD Under the Radar podcast, your source for everything you need to know about the conferences other than the major conferences. This is where we focus on the 23 non-multi-bid conferences. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. With me, as always, David Griggs. David, you seem pretty excited tonight.
Oh, I am.
We've got some huge news, don't we?
Huge news. We had this. Well, I'll let you explain it, Chad. The Loebs waiver movement. What is it? Why are we doing it? And then what are we doing next?
Yeah, well, actually, Loebs with a huge game coming up Thursday night. We're recording this Wednesday, January 27th. Coming up tomorrow night, a huge home game against Cal State Bakersfield to try to further pull away into first place in the Western Athletic Conference. But the Grand Canyon Antelopes are not being permitted by the NCAA or by the Western Athletic Conference to participate in their postseason tournaments, despite the fact that they are the best team in the WAC. They are receiving a vote in the top 25 AP poll. This is a great team this year.
Yes, it is. And they're having a historic season for a transitional program. With just the two losses, they're racking up wins. They have the chance to be one of the, I think, the second team ever to finish in first place as a transitional team. And the last team that did it was Birmingham Southern, and they moved to Division III the next year. So this is a historic season. I mean, it is under the radar. It is below the sight line. But they're not eligible because they're a transitional team, which makes absolutely no sense. That's why we've adopted them. That's why we're supporting them, because of their unique situation. And
We start at the beginning of the year. We start with this hashtag Loebs waiver move. We've gotten a lot of followers out there. We do want to give a shout out to all of you.
Yeah.
But we still haven't gotten the NCAA to act on it. And so we've decided to go to an even higher power than the NCAA.
We are going
to the White House, David.
Literally, we are petitioning President Obama to give the Loebs a presidential waiver to allow them to play in the WAC and NCAA tournaments.
And if you could pull this up on your screen here, David.
Yes, just let me see. This is I'm getting it right now. It takes a second when you don't have any arms.
Now, for those of you that are watching this, if you want to look either right up above us here, you will see the link to exactly what we're looking at here.
Yes.
And here it is now coming from David's screen.
Yes.
We have petitioned through whitehouse.gov. We began this petition now to grant the Grand Canyon Antelopes a waiver to participate in the 2016 WAC NCAA basketball tournaments. David, you want to read the next section there?
Yeah, despite being one of the top teams in the nation, including receiving top 25 votes, and the best team in the Western Athletic Conference, the NCAA is unfairly discriminating against the Grand Canyon Antelopes and barring them from competing for the national championship. This is completely unfair. Hashtag Loebs waiver. And it's a brand new signature, so only one person has signed it.
That was me. I created it.
I am going to sign it myself right now on the air, and we need everyone to do this. The link, where it should be right below us, shouldn't it, Chad?
It'll be right below us. You'll see the link there. Click on it. You see we've got a goal of 100,000 signatures by February 26th. And if we reach that goal, we are going to be reaching out to President Obama himself, and we are going to be having him appear, hopefully, on our Under the Radar podcast to discuss how he is going to get this waiver through the NCAA before the WAC tournament starts.
Yes. Oh, wait a minute.
And there it is. David, you've got to verify with your email, but you'll take care of that.
Yeah, I will take care of that.
By the time anybody looks at this, it'll be up to at least two. We want to get this going. We want to get this rolling. This is our way to get this done, folks.
Right, and this goes right to President Obama. Like, President Obama will get this. I mean, just like he gets all these petitions. And, like, we intend to have President Obama on this show.
We will. We will do everything we can to get him here.
Yeah, he will be here on this show talking about the Loebs.
But this is important, everybody. Not only should you sign it, tweet it to your friends, email it to your friends, send it by Facebook, Instagram, whatever else you use out there.
If you're watching and you're at the game tomorrow, pull this petition up on your phone and walk around and just send it to everybody at the game. We got to get this going. The President Obama will grant the waiver.
We are working on this. Join us, everybody. Yeah. Hashtag Lopes Waiver. Let's keep tweeting it, but sign the petition.
Sign the petition.
We do have a few other issues, things we want to discuss here. We're going to get back and discuss a little bit more about the Western Athletic Conference towards the end of our show and bring this up again. But, David, we did an update tonight on our NCAA Tournament Survival Board. This is a very important tool used by the NCAA Selection Committee.
Yes.
The Selection Committee themselves use this board to know what teams are and are not eligible to qualify for the NCAA Tournament. If you go to our website, click on Tournament Survival Board, you'll see exactly what's on David's screen right now.
Yeah. And it just tells you right now there's 338 teams that are still eligible for the NCAA tournament. Many could still get an at-large bid. Yeah. And well, Grand Canyon, we'll show you. Where is that right there? There they are in the WAC, and it says pending waiver right there.
But pending waiver.
Yeah. And you'll notice that they're in italics. Why are they in italics, Chad?
Well, there's – at this point in the season, there's two different ways teams could appear, in italics or not in italics.
Yeah.
If you're not in italics, you're going to have to win an automatic bid to make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
If you are in italics, you might qualify for an at-large bid even. Now, we weren't even campaigning for an at-large bid for Grand Canyon. We just want them to have a shot at the automatic bid. But, hey, maybe President Obama will give us that as well.
Right.
So you see, like, for example, you see the ACC there. Everybody could still, if they won out, possibly get under at-large consideration. They're still all available.
Yeah.
Now, as we go further on in the season, some of these teams, especially the major conferences, will go into bold. That means they are locks. That means that no matter what happens, they don't win another game, we feel they'll be able to make the tournament. Eventually, some teams may go into bolds and all caps. Those are teams that have actually clinched an automatic bid.
Right.
The whole legend is right up there on the top of this screen. Mm. But just wanted to point out the update there. That we will be probably updating this on at least a weekly basis the rest of the way, and daily once we get to the lot closer to the championship week.
Yeah.
But on that note, we want to go ahead and move right into our under-the-radar conferences. And David, why don't you define under-the-radar for us again? We haven't done that yet tonight.
Yeah. Well, what it is, we define it, there are nine major conferences. Well, okay, five power conferences, which are the ACC, SEC, Big 10, Big 12, and Pac-12. There's four additional basketball conferences that typically get multiple bids to the tournament. So those are the Big East, the Atlantic 10, the Mountain West, and the American, although the Mountain West looking more under the radar than some under the radar conferences this year. Under the radar is anyone that is not in those conferences. So it's the other 23 that are not regular multi-bid leagues. And the other thing about it is that you can't be ranked in the top 25, because if you're in the top 25, you're not under the radar.
And right now, Wichita State moved back into the top 25 this week. They are no longer under the radar.
Right.
We've been forecast that for a few weeks now, that they would be falling off of our show soon, and they have.
Yeah.
Also, some national brand schools. There's only two of them.
Oh, yeah.
Gonzaga and BYU. We do not consider either one of those to be technically under the radar programs.
Right.
But we like to start with one conference, and for the last few weeks, probably all season, honestly, we've been kind of making fun of one conference. And every time we talk about Conference USA, we talk about the top of the conference and the rest being basically the Southland. And we've been kind of insulting the Southland a little bit. We kind of need to apologize here, I think, because I think the Southland might be better than most of Conference USA.
The top certainly is. There's four teams in there that are better than not all of Conference USA, but of the 14 teams in Conference USA, they're probably better than eight or nine of them. Maybe even more than that. Corpus Christi had a pretty good out of conference. They were one of the only two teams that did, but they've been blowing through conference play. SFA, everybody knows about them. They've been dominant. They in the past 2 years, and they're still unbeaten in conference as it is. So they're another one. Houston Baptist, Chad, I am more surprised by them, and this is not hyperbole, than just about anything else that's happened on a national level, not just an under-the-radar level.
Yeah, and it's kind of amazing here. Look at the Southland Conference. There are only three conferences in the entire nation right now with two or more teams that are still undefeated in conference play. One of them is the Ivy League, which is most teams have only played two games, if not less, so far, so it doesn't even really count. The Big West has two undefeated teams. We'll get to them in a little bit. Other than that, the only other conference in the country with multiple undefeated teams is the Southland, with all three of these teams being 7-0. These teams are a combined 21-0 against the rest of the conference here.
Right.
Amazingly. And Houston Baptist, exactly, came out of absolutely nowhere.
Right.
Nobody was expecting this.
And I thought they were bad by Southland standards. I mean, I realize a lot of people watching this are like, well, yeah, they're still weak. But they're still a lot better than I thought they would be, and what I think you thought. Who thought they would be this good, especially when they limped through out of conference play the way
they went 2-7 against Division One competition, a non-conference, only beating Rice and UC Riverside at home. Their other four non-conference wins were Hillsdale Free Will Baptist this past week, Ecclesia. Yeah. Arlington Baptist, and one of our favorite non-D1 schools over at Crowley's Ridge.
Crowley's Ridge.
But other than that, I mean, they went out and got paid a little bit. They lost at Michigan, at Arizona State. But they also lost a game to Rider. They lost a game to Illinois State. Yeah. 7-0, though, in league play. They've already won four games away from home in conference. It's shocking almost.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, we're halfway through just about, so good for them.
We'll be finding out a lot really soon. These teams are finally going to start playing each other this weekend. SFA and Corpus Christi play. Houston Baptist has both teams coming up next week.
Yeah. And again, relatively new to Div 1, recently a transitional program. So congratulations to them.
Yeah, they began their transition back in 2009. Yeah. I believe that they were one of the members of one of our favorite old conferences here, the Great West Conference, for a few years too, before moving over to the Southland. But clearly, the best season in Houston Baptist history. If they don't even win another game, just for the fact that they start out 7-0 in league play. I guess the other team I do want to mention here, we really haven't discussed them at all. We've been talking so much about the Lopes waiver. Incarnate Word, same situation as the Lopes, in their third transitional year, has been a bit of an interesting factor here. They won at St. John's this year. They beat Nebraska and Tim Miles last year.
Yeah.
You know, not quite the level of the Lopes, but I think unless they get a waiver as well from the president, once they get to full competition, they're going to be a factor here in the Southland in a few years.
I think so, too. And again, they have had some, like you said, some signature wins throughout the transitional period. This is generally a very, very difficult time for a lot of schools. A lot of the ones coming up now haven't struggled as much. But if you look at Savannah State going 7-79 for a stretch, and NJIT, last year's team of the people, losing 60 of 61 or whatever it was. It may not have been that exactly, but it was a lot. You know, to see them reeling off these kinds of wins as a transitional program, congrats to them. NKU's done pretty well. Omaha's done really well. They're actually through the process now. So, yeah, I mean, for them to get some of the wins that they've gotten really is kind of noteworthy here.
Yeah, maybe we just use that a little bit of a transition. Another team that got a big win as a transitional team this year, UMass Lowell won at Boston College. I mean, hey. Yeah. Let's go right through the rest of our under-the-radar leagues here kind of in order, and we like to start up in the America East, where Stony Brook is just looking better and better every week, David.
Yeah, Stony Brook really had a great game against Albany earlier in the week. It was a Friday. It was a high-stakes game, Friday night, national television. And it was the reason the stakes were high is because home court advantage is on the line for the conference tournament. They now have a 2-game lead over Albany plus a win over Albany. I don't want to say that they can coast through. They need to keep doing like they're doing, but a really impressive showing by Stony Brook. And just, I mean, they've won, I believe, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4. It's 11 in a row.
They've won 12 games in a row, right, as we sit here right now.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the 2-game lead is huge, because if they win every game other than the trip to Albany on February 17th, they still get the home court advantage here.
Yeah, and what a nice arena they have. It's relatively new. The crowd was great. This is a very well-supported program here. And I know that they've been kind of a punchline, you know, the Buffalo Bills of the America East, second so many times. I'm kind of getting behind Stony Brook a little bit. Lee Delvecchio, one of our colleagues, had actually, this wasn't on the air or on or published, but he was kind of making a case that he thought Stony Brook deserved an at-large. Now, let me clarify that. I am under no impression whatsoever, even if they went out all the way to the championship and lose, that the committee would even look at them, the real one. But our committee doesn't really worry about matching what the real committee does. I'd listen to that argument. I don't think I would agree with it, but I'd listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, and you're talking about not losing again until you lose to Albany championship game at home on the day before Selection Sunday. And honestly, I don't think they're going to do it. I think they will slip up. They do have a game at Vermont this weekend as well as the trip to Albany left. So they, I don't know that they're necessarily going to cruise the rest of the way, but they've got a couple of snake pits left to go to here.
Right.
Let's keep moving, though, over to the Atlantic Sun, where we're talking about another team with a two-game lead, and that's this North Florida team continues to really be impressive here since they've gone into conference play. 17-6 on the season, and now with Jacksonville having gone and won at Florida Gulf Coast tonight in our under-the-radar game of the day, two-game lead in the conference.
Yeah, and they're completely outclassing everyone. Fortunately, this conference also moved to campus sites, so they don't have to worry about going somewhere else as the top-seeded team and it being a virtual road game. This is kind of what we expected. If anything, the surprise is that NJIT and Gulf Coast have struggled as much as they have.
Yeah, especially NJIT sitting here with three conference losses already, including that very, very bad loss to South Carolina Upstate at home, which it's just not a good South Carolina Upstate team. And to lose that game at home, lost in overtime at Gulf Coast, lost to North Florida at home as well over the weekend. NJIT, they better find a way to start winning some games, or they're not even going to get the 4-5 game at home at the conference tournament.
Right. And just a quick note here, Chad, I should have mentioned this at the top. The graphics you're seeing on the screen are provided by our friend Warren Nolan, warrennolan.com, one of the best free statistical sites on the internet as far as RPI, team sheets, conference pages. So be sure and check him out.
Yeah, and just when you look at some of these records that are coming up here, Warren's site is D1 records only. So yes, you hear me mention a slightly different record, it's because I'm also looking at some other stats here as we go through this that include some non-D1 records too. But let's move over to the Big Sky, where all throughout the non-conference season, beginning of the conference season, we've been saying it's going to be a two-team race, and I think we were pretty much right on there, David. Montana and Weber State clearly pulling away from the rest of the conference point.
Right. Montana was a little disappointing out of conference, especially when you consider how well they played against some top teams in their games. And they would play well in a losing effort, but then they'd go out and they'd completely cluse a game that they should easily win. What is clusing, just for those that might be watching for the first time?
Well, it's one of two terms that we have adopted here. A clusing is losing a game that you have no reason to lose, that you are clearly the better team. You may even build up a nice, comfortable lead, and then the second half you just fall apart. It's just a game that there's no – you just look at it, it's a complete head-scratcher. That is called clusing. We also have a new term, though, because if you have a very – if you have an insurmountable lead with, let's say, by 7 points with under and the ball with under 20 seconds left, that's waking. That's a slightly different scenario, though.
Right. But some of these losses, you know, the loss particularly to San Jose State, it's just like, what in the world? And, you know, to get out there to play well against Gonzaga, to get out there and play well in a couple other games, thought they would have done a little better out of conference than what they did. But since starting conference play, they have been really strong.
Yeah, just the one loss to Idaho. They've played two more games, interesting, than Weber has. Weber sitting at 5-1, Montana at 7-1. The two teams only play once this season also. Yeah. That game won't be till February 27th at Weber, so that may determine who gets to wear the white uniforms in a potential championship game and not much else given the change of the conference tournament format here in the
Big Sky. Yeah, and completely ruined it. So anyway, moving on.
Moving on to the Big South Conference, where we had a bit of an upset tonight as UNC Asheville went to Coastal Carolina, just lost here. Now moved into a two-way tie with High Point, and actually three-way in the loss column with Winthrop involved there as well.
Yeah.
Unless I don't have the most recent updated standings. Really, this league was so tight last year. Winthrop did get the win tonight, so they're three-way tie now at 7-3. Coastal Radford a game back at 6-4. Cardner Webb and Liberty two games back at 5-5.
Yeah,
we're setting up for another wild showdown the rest of the way here in the Big South.
Yeah, and it was crazy last year because at this point last year we were more than halfway through. I think seven teams were separated by just one game. Lots of parity in this league, lots of rivalry in this league. You know, across Virginia, South Carolina, and North Carolina, the regular season. It's always been really exciting. It would be even more exciting if they would go back to their old tournament format.
Yeah,
since all these teams are bus leagues anyway, like there's no reason not to.
Now, I would argue it's probably going to be pretty much a true neutral format, though. Campbell, who is hosting, is currently sitting at 2-8 in conference and dead last, so
yeah,
most likely going to be a non-factor.
But I like rewarding teams that earn. I like the idea of earning home court. Okay.
Well, I mentioned earlier that the other conference with multiple undefeated teams is the Big West. And right now you've got both Hawaii and UC Irvine sitting at 5-0. Hawaii 16-2 overall. Irvine 16-5 overall. David,
yeah,
when you look at the top of this conference, at these two teams here, just how good are they? And let me throw it out there. If one of these teams – or if they both only lose to each other going forward, is there a little bit of room for some committee room talk for these teams here?
I definitely think so. I think Irvine's paper is going to end up being a little better than Hawaii's, just because Hawaii played so few out-of-conference road games. Having said that, Hawaii's been winning on the road since they began conference play. But, yeah, I mean, if one of them runs the table or if they only lose to each other, especially if it's Irvine, they fit the demographic. They would be a first-place team. Their RPI would be in the 40s, maybe even better than that. In fact, it would probably be even higher than that. They'd be missing a couple things that you normally see at large teams get. They wouldn't have an abundance of top 50 wins, but they would have a lot of road wins. Let's pull them up here.
Yeah, I could tell you. I mean, UC Irvine, as we sit here right now, has five true road wins along with three neutral court wins.
Yeah.
Their five losses are all in the top 100 at Oregon, at Kansas, at St. Mary's, Boise State, and Evansville on neutral courts. You look over at Hawaii, again, they only have the two road wins so far because of the fact that they didn't leave the island during the non-conference season. But they've only got two losses overall. One of them was to Oklahoma by only 3 points.
Game. Yeah.
And the other was at Texas Tech. It's hard to argue with that. There's no team other than SMU right now that has less than two losses in the entire nation.
Right, and I think it is time to start looking at them as being on the bubble, especially UC Irvine. Irvine had chances. I remember, like, we had talked about it going into Feast Week, the tournament they were playing in, how important that was. They get one or two more out there. We're not even talking about could they get inside the bubble. They'd already be there. They'd be there with Monmouth, Valpo, and teams like that.
These two teams will meet on February 12th in Hawaii, February 20th at Irvine. So two nights and two games to circle on your calendar.
Yeah.
If either one of them sweeps those two games, goes undefeated in conference, loses in the championship game to the other, it's going to be an interesting debate here about the Big West.
Yeah.
That's all I got to throw out there.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Now, there are some teams like Long Beach and Santa Barbara that may make some noise here and make that not quite as easy, though, also.
So. Right, yeah.
We wanted to talk about parity. Let's talk about the Colonial, where we were sitting here with seven teams within two games of each other, and I couldn't tell you who the best team in this conference is among those seven.
Every time I try and guess it, that team loses. So, and unfortunately, because of the parity, I think that it's messed up everybody's paper enough to where – now, again – we have three teams sitting at 6-2 with James Madison, UNC Wilmington, and Hofstra. Wilmington probably can't get there. But if Madison or Hofstra wins out, I think
or William and Mary right behind them.
I mean, we just mentioned parity. We just mentioned how hard it is to do. It's not probable at all. In fact, it's very unlikely. But if I still, that we're in a position to where if one of those teams wins out, and they got to win out, Chad, I think they're in.
Right. But again, there's so much parity in this conference. I think it's impossible for anybody to win out. I think your conference champion may have five losses in league play.
Right. You know, we saw Northeastern with six losses last year. Again, lots of parity last year. Northeastern wins the conference tournament, wins the automatic bid, loses to Notre Dame by, was it 2 points? I mean, it was just a remarkable effort. And Notre Dame goes on to the Elite Eight and almost knocks off Kentucky. So don't be fooled. Whoever it is that comes out of this league, assuming it's Madison, UNC Wilmington, Hofstra, William & Mary, somebody like that, they're going to be a dangerous – even Northeastern is good enough. They haven't always played like it, but their ceiling is very high. They won at Miami. These teams are good enough to, if they can get onto the 13 or 14 line, to really, really make somebody sweat.
I agree. We started the show by talking about the Southland Conference, which also included 12 out of 14 teams from Conference USA. But let's talk about the other two. Yeah. UAB and maybe Middle Tennessee at the top of the CUSA standings, David. First of all, is there anybody else worth discussing in this league besides
them? Not so much. Marshall up there at 6-1. They're worth discussing in the sense that they are a very big surprise after being so underwhelming out of conference, you know, just to be a game out of first. UAB, a little bit of trivia here, 13-game winning streak, longest in the nation. Yeah, here's the screen here. Let's pull up UAB's profile. As many games as they've won and as good as they've looked, we have a very, very serious problem with this profile, Chad. And you can see it right there. I'm highlighting it.
What, the bodybuilder that's coming up on your screen? This is UAB's wins. I guess that's what you're talking about.
Well, the strength of schedule is 295.
295.
Yes.
The best win of that 13-game winning streak, maybe the home win over Stephen F. Austin.
I mean,
they won a game at Old Dominion in overtime, but Old Dominion very disappointing this year.
Yes.
And of those seven wins in conference, five of them have been at home. Finally, going back on the road this week, though, at Western Kentucky and at Marshall.
Right. It's just not going to happen. If UAB wins out all the way to the championship game, they'll get a discussion. But I remember this would be – I know what do we say? Don't think categorically, but having said that, I'm going to think categorically. This would be a historically low strength of schedule pick, and not just that, it would be historically low by about 100 spots for an at-large bid. I mean, 298.
That's bad.
And we said it at the beginning of the year, Chad. We said it last year with Murray State. We knew UAB was going to be good. Why did they put together this schedule?
Right. The only other team that I think is worth mentioning very briefly is this Middle Tennessee team. They actually have the best RPI in the conference, better than UAB's by 30
by
points.
By quite a bit.
because of the higher strength of schedule.
Right.
They did lose head-to-head to UAB to start the CUSA season, have not lost sets, including winning at Old Dominion, beating UTEP. So keep an eye out on this Middle Tennessee team. We did like them non-conference until they kind of fell apart at the end of the non-conference season.
Yeah.
But they scored a few nice wins, including beating Auburn and Belmont and UNC Asheville. So keep an eye on this Middle Tennessee team. Even if they don't win the CUSA regular season, they probably going to be a threat in the CUSA tournament.
Right.
Over in the Horizon League, David, we've been speaking for weeks now as to whether or not Valpo was going to go undefeated in conference play. Was there anybody that could beat them? You said all along it was going to be Wright State, correct?
No, I said it would be no one. I Wright State, just to show you, they're 7-1 in conference play. They were abysmal. And I mean, they weren't just losing. They were losing, you know, really bad to teams that really weren't good. I think the score of that Xavier game, the final score was 90-55. I think it was 34-6 at one point during the game, or just something completely outrageous.
They began the season 3-7. Two of those three wins were non-D1, so basically 1-7 to start the year before beating Charleston Southern, Bowling Green, and Murray heading into Horizon play, but other than the loss at Green Bay, since Horizon League play started, they haven't lost a game.
Looking really good. Yeah, and I know that they were at home, but that was still a really, really nice win for a program that hasn't had much nice happen to it. And this is important because, you know, here we are again, another Horizon League race with two teams at the top, two teams competing for home court.
Yeah, no, not anymore. The conference tournament will now be played in Detroit. You can forget about that home court thing. I guess that really at this point, the only other thing we need to discuss in the Horizon is down at the bottom of it. Illinois-Chicago, we want to congratulate them. Delaware State with a win Monday night and a second win tonight has their first two D1 wins of the season. UIC, only team of the nation without a Division I win as we sit here right now. They do have two non-D1 wins.
Yes.
But that makes them the current front runner for the coveted Hoops HD Centenary Award.
And this is what is the Centenary Award, Jen?
The Centenary Award is the award given at the end of the season by us here at Hoops HD to the worst team in the nation. And as part of the award, you get to remain on our NCAA Selection Tournament Committee, our Hoops HD committee's under consideration board for the entirety of the process. You may not be removed from that board. You are eligible to be voted into the NCAA tournament by our committee. Hasn't happened yet that the Centenary Award winner got voted in, but maybe this will be the year even. Who knows?
Right. And the thing about them here, they have some very impressive numbers. 350 in the RPI, 302 non-conference strength of schedule, 239 overall. That might work against them a little bit. We normally don't like to see schedules that strong.
But yeah, they do have a couple chances for the win. The best chance for the win, probably February 20th when they host Northern Kentucky.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Do not have I've got the wrong schedule up here.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Illinois Chicago's best chance for winning probably coming actually maybe Cleveland State coming up this weekend at home. They do have Northern Kentucky at home as well on February 13th. They lost to NKU in overtime on the road last week. Although the game went to overtime, they ended up losing it by 13 in overtime. So that's pretty pathetic right there.
So one more question about the Horizon. Is Valpo still inside the bubble? I think they are.
I agree with you. I think that they absolutely had margin for error. And a lot less now. I don't know that they can lose. If they're going to need an at-large bid, it means they're going to suffer a bad loss in the conference tournament.
Right.
So I don't think they can lose again besides that conference tournament loss. But I think they are.
And they really shouldn't lose again, truthfully.
The home game against Wright State, a trip to Milwaukee towards the end of the year, the two most dangerous games there for them.
Yeah.
Let's keep going on here. Up next is the Ivy League. The one other conference with multiple undefeated teams is Yale and Columbia are 2-0 and Princeton is 1-0. We finally are going to get some answers in the Ivy League this weekend, though, David, as finally the true heart of the Ivy League season starts this week.
Yeah, it kind of does. They get into their regular Friday-Saturday rotation, which is always kind of fun. They call it the 14-game tournament. I don't – like, again, I think it takes away from November, December, and for them the first part of January because there's no pressure to play your way inside the bubble. But now that we're to this juncture, it is one of the more exciting races. And when you look at Yale, Columbia, Princeton, Harvard, it's going to be – Harvard going down to Dartmouth earlier this week – or last week, it's going to be a really fun four-horse race in what's normally one or two horses in this conference.
Right. I think it's probably just going to be a three-horse race. I'm not that convinced yet on Harvard, especially with the
Dartmouth
loss.
They're only a game out of first, Chad. You got to keep
that. But Yale definitely is going to be interesting here. Columbia going for their first tournament. Both Yale and Columbia haven't been in the NCAA tournament since the 1960s or something like that. So it's it'll be interesting. As we go forward here. Over in the Metro Atlantic, the Monmouth Hawks, we love them. We want to love them even more, but every time we do, they're now sitting here with three of the worst losses by anybody that's going to be in the at-large bid discussion, at Canisius, at Army, at Manhattan.
Right, and the only thing that kind of saves them there is that they were on the road. You don't often see a team – inside the bubble with multiple losses to teams outside the top 200. Again, that's categorical, but you don't really see it. You have seen it before. I think Monmouth has done enough to offset it if they need it. But, you know, those three losses, again, to teams outside the top 200, I think that is going to hurt them a little bit.
They've still got 11 more regular season games to go. They have – I don't think they can afford another loss here. I really don't.
They probably not. Now, they are still the outright first-place team. That's
working. I have a game over St. Peter's right now.
Yeah, and they do have a couple tests here. They go to Siena. Siena's a really – again, not a tournament team, but Siena is really tough at home. That's not going to be an easy game to win. But if you're a tournament team, it's not easy to get to the tournament, and the teams that get there are the ones that win the games that aren't easy to win. So it works the same for Monmouth the way it does for everybody else. They need to win the big games, but they need to avoid the bad losses. I don't want to say they're completely out of strikes, but they really – if they win out, they're fine. Do you agree with that?
I think if they win – if they don't lose again – until the Metro Atlantic Championship game or even the Metro Atlantic semifinal.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that a loss in the semifinal or the championship game would have much difference.
Right.
But it'd be really, the same equally bad loss. But I think they make it. But if there is another loss between now and the end of the regular season, at that point, I think the Hawks better just go up to Albany and March and win that tournament, and that's
right. And they really should win all of these games. And another reason that they need to win them all is because you're talking about losing to Quinnipiac, St. Peter's, you're talking about Marist, Ryder, really, really, really weak teams.
Yeah, and they've got to win a game at Siena. Yeah. They're going to have to win a game at Ryder. They're going to have to win a game at St. Peter's. Those are three tough places to win.
Yeah.
And they've got to win all three of those games, along with their home games against Iona, the big rematch there. That's going to be a very heated game.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy.
Right. And this is a heated league. I mean, I don't think most non-under-the-radar people realize that the Northeast Conference, I mean, these are some pretty intense rivalries on a smaller scale.
Over in the Mid-American Conference, maybe we finally have somebody that's starting to step up here. Kent State at 6-1, a game up over Akron in the East, and Northern Illinois, who's also 5-2 in the West. Have we finally gotten a team here that's starting to pull away, David?
I'm starting to like this Kent State team a little bit. They had a real nice win earlier this week. I'm starting to like Kent State as my favorites to win the conference.
I would note that, you know, they are only a game up on Akron. They won't play each other until February 20th, and then again on March 4th. So, those two games are coming very late in the season.
Right, and I don't know if they did that by design. I mean, that is probably – there's a lot of rivalry in this conference. As you can see, there's Bowling Green, Detroit, Bowling Green, Toledo, you know, Miami and Ohio. Kent State, Akron, probably the biggest rivalry in this league, would you say? That's probably correct.
It's one of the bigger ones, yeah.
And I think they did that to kind of like have it later in the year. They wanted them both late for some reason.
Right. I think those two games should decide the East Division, may decide the entire conference. Northern Illinois is still an incredible story here. 16 wins already. I think, you know, they've only been over 20 wins once or twice in school history, and they got a shot to. They should definitely get over there this year again. Over in the Mideastern Athletic Conference, we have a team that's over 500 at 11-8. Hampton, although Norfolk State and Howard both tied with them in the loss column. What do you do with this conference? You just move on.
Chances are, I mean, barring lots and lots and lots of upsets during championship week, I don't think even if it's Hampton, I don't think anybody gets inside the first four. And if it's anybody else, they definitely don't.
Yeah, yeah. No, we are not talking about anything here other than the fact that the MEAC historically has had some of the most exciting and fun conference tournaments. So I do look forward to that every year.
I mean, it's never been a top conference, not even by under the radar standards, but it's exceptionally poor this year. The last team, it's never been the worst one. And right now they're sitting 32 in the RPI. So kind of a bad year for the MEAC.
Let's keep going over to the Missouri Valley Conference. We're not going to be discussing Wichita State, other than the fact that they will be at Evansville this weekend in a huge game that the Aces need and may not even be enough if they win this and win the rest of their games to get into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, Evansville over the weekend, and they were really rolling. Their only loss, the close loss at Wichita State, a game they had a chance to win, went to Indiana State, who we kind of like coming into the year, I at least did, and just did not show up. Really disappointing loss, really damaging loss for them. And I don't know. If they went out, I don't think they're inside the bubble. They may be on it. And we may be talking about them, but they're going to be sweating big time even if they went out. And, again, it's UAB, Murray State last year, Stephen F. Austin, didn't play anybody. Had they won a game – like, had they won – had they done better in the Wooden Legacy, I think they would have had chances to at least get some quality competition. But there's just nothing here.
Yeah, the other team – we've mentioned a few times the Southern Illinois team, just because of the gaudy overall record with only three losses against zero competition. They actually host Evansville first this week before Evansville hosts Wichita State. So big week for Evansville.
It is.
But this Southern Illinois team, not for real, right, David?
No, they're not. Much improved. Again, I don't want to make it sound like that we're dissing them. They are going in the right direction. I think Barry Henson's doing a great job. They are not a tournament caliber team.
And just throw some numbers out there. They're 104 in the RPI, 110 in the Ken Palms, 286 strength of schedule. Not good.
Right.
We talked about how bad the MEAC was with only one team over 500. Same situation in the Northeast with only Wagner with an overall winning record. Another really bad-looking conference right now.
Yeah, it is. No one did anything out of conference of note. So you're looking at the 16 line with this league. It's a fun league. With all the rivalries, it's one of our favorites. You see there, like Mount St. Mary's, Wagner, St. You know, four games separating the top four teams. And then you got, you know, the St. Francis, Brooklyn, St. Francis, or in the Long Island rivalries that are so much fun. We like this league, but it's more likely to generate a Centenary Award winner than it is a 15-seeded team.
And you're talking about Central Connecticut down there, currently 351 in the RPI and in the Ken Palms, right there in the battle with the Illinois Chicago and Prairie View team we're going to be discussing a little bit also that I think might be in that discussion. But yeah. One thing that I think might be interesting as we head into late February, about a month from now, the Northeast Conference, is we see how bunched up these other nine teams are. Only the top eight do qualify for the conference tournament, so we could have an interesting battle for that ninth and final spot.
Yeah.
Sorry, the eighth and final spot and the ninth team who doesn't make it. And given how close these teams are, anybody could win this conference tournament. So
yeah, and they could. So, and again, home court advantage, a big deal. So.
Over in the Ohio Valley Conference, Belmont continuing to dominate since they've gone into conference play as we thought they would. A little disappointing in non-conference, but I think this team is just going to run away with it. I don't know if there's really much worth discussing the OVC besides them.
No, probably not. Belmont, like you said, the best team. And again, they don't get it on their home court, but at least they get it in their home city. It would be a major, major toast-up with them buying into the semifinals in their home city for them to not win that tournament.
Let's go to the Patriot League. We're heading into play tonight. Bucknell was 8-1, tied at the Lost Cloud with Navy, who was 6-1. American was down in the well into the 300s in RPI and sitting at 1-6 overall.
Yeah.
Looking at Ken Palm's rating, he rates the thrill score for each game going into each day. The worst game on the schedule today was going to be American at Navy because there was absolutely no shot that that game could be interesting at all. Navy lost at home to American tonight, David.
Yeah, really, really bad loss by Patriot League standards because Navy was trying to keep pace with Bucknell on top of the list. And again, first place team gets home court throughout. Bucknell just one loss on the year. I don't think they've lost at home in conference play. A real, real surprise. Yeah, just inexplicable, really, especially with how well
they closed.
Yeah,
we talked about it
badly, and especially with how well Navy had been playing.
Just to correct you here, actually, Bucknell's one conference loss was a home loss to Colgate.
Oh,
so.
Okay, thank you. Yeah,
and Bucknell has actually now lost five home games. They've not been very as dominant at home as they have been in the past this year, but they certainly, you know, at 8-1 in conference play and being on the road in conference, they are definitely in the driver's seat now for the rest of the way for this conference.
Mm-hmm.
Over in the Southern Conference, we've been talking Chattanooga all year, 17-3 overall, 6-1 in league play. And let's throw the question out there. If the Mocs win out to the conference championship game, are they in?
It's going to be close. And one of the problems is, let's get there.
You look at this great record here. It reminds you a little bit of Murray State last year. But then you see, wait a second. They won at Georgia. They won at Illinois. And even more important than those two, they won at Dayton.
Yeah, they did. And, I mean, like Murray State, there's a lot of sub-200 teams on here.
But you have not going – that Dayton win is just going to – could carry them, yeah. Carry them all the way there.
And that is infinitely more that – like, one is infinitely more than one. Like, Murray State had nothing at all anywhere close to that. As much as we like under the radar, if you recall last year, we talked all year long about how Murray State could win 30 games and they still need to win the last one, which they didn't. At least there's something here for Chattanooga. If they win out, an argument could be made, and it might be good enough to get them in. I'd hate to not see them get in if they won out. But, you know, the one thing that kind of killed them was that loss at Furman.
Yeah, that's a bad loss. I guess one of the things we should mention very briefly here, tied for Chattanooga first place right now is East Tennessee State, a team we haven't mentioned all season.
Right.
And they did lose to Chattanooga. That was their one loss.
Yeah.
Coming off back-to-back home overtime wins over Mercer and Citadel, so kind of been squeezing out the wins here for the Buccaneers. Anything worth discussing with them, David, or is this kind
of... Their next four games are all on the road. I don't think they're going to come out of that without a loss. I don't think they're going to be able to keep pace with Chattanooga. And again, they host Chattanooga on the 13th, and that's a big game, and it's a chance for Chattanooga really to get at least somewhat of a notable win. East Tennessee State, 7-1 at home.
Let's move over to the SWAC. We already discussed the Southland Conference, but in the SWAC, we talked about Texas Southern all during the non-conference season when they sat there, I think, at 1-11 non-conference and said, you know what, this team could still win the SWAC despite that overall record.
Yep.
Because that's how much money they made this year, I'll put it that way, going right out there and play these bye games. 7-0 in conference play and first place by two games now, or game and a half at least.
And I agree with you. I think they've looked better than anyone else since conference play started. I'm a little surprised Southern has struggled the way that they have. I thought it was Southern's conference to win. But they look really – I mean, I think they're going to get it. I think they're going to finish first anyway. Little bit of off-the-court news here, Chad. Yes. Came out today with Alabama A&M having similar APR issues that what Southern had. I didn't get a chance to read it, I must confess. But the data they submitted was flagged as being incorrect. Is that what's happened?
The data they submitted for the last 3 years was flagged as being calculated incorrectly. They have until sometime early this summer to get the data corrected. If so, everything will be fine. If not, their entire program, much like Southern was the last couple of years, all sports will receive a postseason ban. But Alabama A&M is still okay for this season.
Yeah.
Whatever happens will happen next year. Other off-the-court news, what I thought you were going to mention, was at Prairie View today.
Oh, yes.
Byron Rim resigned as head coach. After a 1-18 start to the season, and finding out that he's in the centenary talks as well.
Right. Hopefully, Prairie View, they've actually had some first place finishes, albeit it was about a decade ago. Just a historically, just outside of that, just an awful program. Hopefully, and again, you don't like to see coaching changes in the middle of the year, but maybe it's a little bit refreshing. With these SWAC programs, I mean, with the tradition they have, with the pride that exists at these HBCUs, and like especially on the football side, I don't know why they can't seem to get it going in basketball. Southern's had some very good teams, and we've seen some really good teams out of the MEAC, but Prairie View being where they're located, I'd like to see them get something turned around and at least be competitive in the SWAC.
Yeah, it is a shame that they can't get going here. And I start to wonder that this may be a conference where all these APR rules are working against them.
Oh, yeah.
All these schools, every year, one or two teams are on a postseason ban for the APR. Alcorn State this year is ineligible. But even then, even when you don't get the ineligibility, there are other sanctions, including scholarship reductions, practice time reductions.
Yeah.
And how is that helping? How is that helping build these programs? You know, maybe there's the solution here isn't to just keep punishing these schools when the grades are bad. Maybe the NCAA needs to find another solution for these schools here.
Right.
Even if you have to craft a special rule for these teams.
Yes. And that's a good point, Chad. And something else that typically works against the SWAC is the situation they're in. The APR has two components. One is, are you eligible? And the second is, are you retained? At this level, you have a lot of junior college transfers, and you have something else. You have a lot of players leaving to potentially go to a junior college. A 4.0 student who leaves and goes to another four-year school, you don't lose the APR point. If they leave and go to a junior college, you do, even if they're a 4.0. So not all of – I mean, again, these are low-resource schools when it comes to academic support and, compliance and things like that. So that's part of the problem. But the other part of the problem is that even when things are going well academically and the support is there, they're losing players to junior colleges. And that's zapping their APR as well.
And maybe that's a correction that needs to be made in the APR calculations here, that junior college transfer should not be penalizing these schools. Let's move over to the Summit League. I still like the South Dakota State team, although we now have Omaha in first place, Fort Wayne and IUPUI tied with them for second.
Yeah.
I don't like them enough that for an at-large bid at this point.
Oh, my God. But how about IUPUI? Good God. One of the biggest surprises, I mean, this is right up there with Houston Baptist. Absolutely just atrocious out of conference. And the Summit League is a pretty good league by under-the-radar standards. I mean, for them to get in there the way Wright State has and the way Houston Baptist has, and the Bee just one game out of first, that's remarkable.
And not only that, this is not a quirk of the schedule that IUPUI just happened to get. To get the South Dakota, Denver, and Oral Roberts early on. Their wins here in conference have been a home win over South Dakota State, a road win at Fort Wayne. I mean, they've picked up a few quality wins here.
Yeah, the road win at Fort Wayne was just jaw-dropping. I admit I didn't watch it, but the reason I didn't watch it was because Fort Wayne was hosting IUPUI. It just wasn't really worth tuning into. And then when you're kind of scrolling through the scores, it was just kind of a head-scratcher. So, you know, we'll have to be sure and check them out. Just inexplicably playing well. 5-2 in conference, 8-13 overall. And then Omaha, the other good story here. First year off transition. I wasn't expecting them to do as well as they have in conference play.
I still expect South Dakota State to win this. And even if they don't win the regular season title, with the conference tournament being in Sioux Falls, about an hour and a half or so from their campus, I expect South Dakota State to win this conference tournament.
I agree. And Western Illinois, I hope they had a spectacular November.
They were on our under-the-radar top 10 list very early in the season after that Wisconsin win. So congratulations to them. But let's move over to the Sun Belt. David, Arkansas Little Rock. In a pretty wild game, did get the road in Arlington. And sitting here with only two losses, wins at Arlington, wins at Tulsa, wins at San Diego State. I'm liking this profile a ton right now.
I am as well. Let's pull it up here. Arkansas Little Rock, I did not like them as much as Arlington coming into this game. It was a game that was not on television. You had to watch it on ULive, so unfortunately, not many people got to see it. It was bananas. It was 42-14 in the first half, and like you and I are sitting there watching it, and it's just – what's going on? What's happening to Arlington? And it was on the road. It was at Arlington, and then they just mounted a furious comeback. And I remember thinking when they got the lead down to 18 with about 3 or 4 minutes to go, it's like Arlington's played well in the second half, but they're still down by 18. They go on a ridiculous, was it 13-0, 15-0 run, got it all the way down to 3. The place was falling down. You know, Little Rock held on the win. So, zany game, lots of fun to watch. One of many zany games we've seen this past week. But so that's what happened off paper. On paper, huge, huge quality road win for Little Rock. I think it drastically improves their profile. I think it pushes them from being on the bubble to much further inside of it. I mean, and if Little Rock wins out and they do play each other again, they have that tough stretch of four straight road games in the latter part of the season. I think you take Little Rock.
Yeah, and you want to take a look at Arlington on the other hand here. Coming off of that loss, Arlington now has to play five straight road games, and in fact, seven out of their next 10 on the road. And with an already ugly-looking profile with the South Alabama loss, the Louisiana Tech loss, I think it's pretty much automatic bid or nothing at this point for the Arlington.
Now, again, they win all five of those road games. It changes the complexion of things because they also go to Georgia State, who's been playing really well. But again, I don't know if they're up to the challenge. You know, it's not going to be easy to win at Georgia State.
Now having lost two out of three with the South Alabama loss there, I could see them going 2-3 on this road trip. I mean, at Louisiana Monroe, at Louisiana Lafayette, at Georgia Southern, those are all solid schools by Sun Belt standards. Large quality schools, but they're all tough places to win.
Correct.
West Coast Conference, we're not going to discuss Gonzaga or BYU, but for this week at least, we are going to discuss St. Mary's. Might be a top 25 team by next week. I know we spoke to them a little bit on the Hoops HD report as well, but the Gales, David, are you ready to put them in your tournament field yet or not?
It depends on if you ask. For my personal field, they're probably not there yet. Now, there is some good things here. Loyola Marymount, while not good at all, is good at home. I think you got to give them some credit for that. Other than that, the home win against Gonzaga is something.
Don't forget the Stanford win, the UC Irvine win, and the BYU win. All three at home, Miguel, but Irvine and Stanford both looking like tournament teams right now.
Right. But here's the thing. Five of the next seven are on the road. Two of those five that are on the road are at BYU and at Gonzaga. We will see. I mean, if you're a tournament team, then let's see what you got. If they if they win four out of these five, I'll be ready. Yeah, I'll be ready.
Circle next Thursday night at BYU. They get through a game at Pacific that they should win on Saturday. Yeah. Then they win at BYU next week. It's going to be tough to argue that the Gales don't belong in the field.
Right.
Even by the David Griggs rules.
Yes. Well, by then, I mean, they'll have – that's four road wins. That's the one thing they're lacking right now.
Finally, last but certainly not least, over in the Western Athletic Conference.
Yes, sir.
We mentioned at the top of the show, if you haven't done it yet, if you have any friends that have come in while you're watching the show, go and click the button.
Down there.
Sign
the petition.
Sign the petition. Tell Barack Obama that the Lopes deserve a chance to play.
I mean, we are petitioning the president.
Hashtag Lopes waiver. Hashtag Lopes petition.
Let's get that going too.
beyond the Lopes in the WAC, they've actually got a huge game coming up, hosting Cal State Bakersfield Thursday night.
Yeah.
Our under the radar game of the day. It's going to be, I'll pretty much guarantee you that at this point. Bakersfield actually lost to New Mexico State over the weekend, though. So those two teams are now both tied for second place.
Right. New Mexico State looking a lot better since conference play began. I was really disappointed with them out of conference, but them and Bakersfield have looked pretty good. I haven't really been impressed by anyone else, not even by WAC standards, with the exception, of course, of the team of the people. And in all 17-2, Chad, seven against Division I competition. It's not going to be appreciated by many people outside of the under the radar circle and Grand Canyon themselves. This really is, all joking aside, a historic season. Team has ever done this well.
Unbelievable. They could. They've got a trip to New Mexico State February 4th. They've got a trip to Bakersfield February 27th. But they have a shot to go undefeated in the WAC. It's not there yet. Two huge road tests still. Also an interesting non-conference test March 1st at the St. Mary's team we were just talking about.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun game at the end of the season.
It should be. I'm glad that got scheduled. I really am.
Let's take a quick look at some of the upcoming games of the next week. We mentioned tomorrow night being that Bakersfield Grand Canyon game. Also, a big game in the Summit League tomorrow night. Omaha's at South Dakota State.
That will be big.
Monmouth with a road test at Quinnipiac. UAB with a nice road test at Western Kentucky. A tough place to win there.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we'll see. It'll be one of their more tougher tests, but it's still not a tough enough test to impress the committee. But, I mean, again, they're going for 14 in a row.
Friday night, we mentioned the Ivy League play will be getting underway. One of our favorite rivalries, even though it's not as important this year, but Friday night, Manhattan at Iona is being played.
Right. Always fun.
Coming up on Saturday, a few games of note. Stony Brook with a tough road test at Vermont. Very difficult to win at Vermont.
Yeah, it really is. And again, they have that two-game cushion, though. So I don't want to say they can afford to lose, but it is a tough test for them, but they're a good team, so big litmus test coming up.
A battle of undefeateds in the Southland as Stephen F. Austin will be at Corpus Christi.
That will be a fun one. We'll be sure and be watching that one.
And another game that could be determining first place in the conference, the Northeast. Wagner is at Mount St. Mary's, so
yeah,
that's an important NEC game here.
Yeah, it is, and that has conference tournament implications as far as home court goes.
I'm also looking forward to an Ivy League game coming up Saturday night. Princeton's at Yale.
That'll be fun.
Those may be the two top teams in the conference there.
Yeah.
St. Mary's has that road game at Pacific. Also, Long Beach State at Hawaii as the Bows try to pick up another home win, something they're very good at.
Yeah. Hawaii's having a good year. And again, you mentioned them and Irvine. They could end up inside the bubble.
One other game of note here in the under the radar coming up on Sunday evening, actually, James Madison's at William and Mary. Almost every game in the Colonial is big, but that's two teams that I think have really, really good shots to win the conference. And that may be one of those decisive games that helps decide who wins this league.
In that tournament this year, is it still in Richmond or was it moved?
It was in Baltimore last year. I'll give you half a second here. I will confirm it. It is still in Baltimore this year.
Okay.
Yes.
Kind of disappointing because, like, with all the good Virginia, I mean, it's going to be a fun tournament, I think, because of so much parity and so much rivalry. You kind of wish it was back in Virginia.
Well, Towson will get their fans there.
Yeah, Towson.
But let's quickly run through our top 10 lists. David, I'm not sure if you have one or not, but I will run through mine at least. You can comment on it.
Sounds good.
Under the radar top 10 list. A lot of changes this week off of last week because there were a lot of losses here among some of these under the radar top teams, but
yeah.
I now have number one overall after the win at Arlington, the Arkansas Little Rock Trojans.
Whoa, you moved them way up.
Moved them all the way up to number one with that win. I love the profile now. Wichita State, obviously off the board, no longer under the radar.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would be number one, but Little Rock.
Wow. I like them. I don't like them as much as Valpo or Monmouth, but
I've moved them
up to four, I think.
I've got them very close. I've got Monmouth 2, Valpo 3. Those are my top three. But Monmouth with a loss, Valpo with a loss, Arlington with a huge win. I'm sorry, Little Rock with a huge win. That's what drove them all the way up to the top of my board. Coming at number four, I have the St. Mary's Gales. I think we've got to start paying a lot more attention to them than we have. So they have moved up a lot in my standings as well. Uh-huh. Like I said, a lot of change in my board off of last week.
Yeah.
Another big change, but number five, they've been hanging down the bottom of my top 10 list all season. I have the Grand Canyon Antelopes.
The team of the people.
Hashtag Lopes petition. Lopes, right there, number five.
Okay. So, yeah, they deserve it. I'm a little curious we'll keep going because there's two teams that I really, really like that you have not called yet.
Okay, number six, I have the Hawaii Rainbows.
Yes, that's one of the two.
Okay. Number seven, I have right behind them, and this was a real close call for me, is the UAB Blazers.
Really? I don't know if I'd have them that high. They would be in my top 10, but the team I would have right behind Hawaii is their conference mates, UC Irvine.
And I've got them at number eight, so I stuck UAB in between the two of them. I think those three could be interchangeable. At nine, I've got the Mocs of Chattanooga. And at number 10, breaking into my top 10 for the first time this season, I've got the Seawolves of Stony Brook.
They deserve it. They're having a really good year. I would have voted for them as well, and I would have probably had them at number 10. I was going to sound smart and say a team you didn't mention was Stony Brook, but you didn't mention them.
I did mention them. There were three teams that do did give honorable mentions. These are three teams that just missed the field: Middle Tennessee, Texas Arlington, and Evansville. But all three kind of sliding off, but poised to steal a spot if somebody else falters. Mm-hmm. But on that note, any other final thoughts for the evening?
Sign the petition. Sign the petition. We are sending it to the president. Checks this site every day. I mean, he has the internet, so he has access to it. This petition is going directly to him, and we're going to invite him to be on our show and discuss the Lobes. Sign the petition.
In fact, regardless of how many petitions we got, we just want to put it out there right now. President Obama, early February. In fact, when we get to championship week, we do a championship week video notebook every night.
Every night.
You're welcome to join us for that entire 2 weeks.
I mean, I know you like filling out the bracket on ESPN or whatever network he does it on, but like you're more than welcome to join us as well for Under the Radar.
Yes, so it's out there, but sign the petition. Let's get this going, and hashtag Lopes Waiver. Get that petition. Have a great night, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Okay.